Alrighty, shall we get started then? Good morning and welcome to this tutorial using Sweep Fun with Scrubby. You'll find out a lot about what it actually means shortly. That was Ella Fitzgerald scatting, absolutely going off. So I like to play people some of my favourite songs when they're waiting around to wonder what the hell, to find out what is actually going on. I'd like to thank you all for coming. I know that you must all be elite hackers, because I was talking to people at breakfast and they were wondering, well, I come to this tutor, well, I really should go to the Automake one or the PHP one, because, you know, work needs me to go there, I need to learn that stuff, but this one sounds more exciting. And you guys have either, you're above that, you know that stuff, or you've gotten over that guilt and you just thought, I want what's exciting, so I'm going to give it to you. This shoot is about that program that you just saw there. It's a sound editor, and it can do a lot of other things as well, which we're going to find out about. The software there is available. I'm not using anything elite and different. It's Sweep version 0.8, which I released in a mad fit on Friday or Saturday night or something last week. Just with a few extra nice features that I wanted to show off here. So you can download that from sweep.sourceforge.net, or just go to metadex.org, which is my site where I store random bits of sound software I'm working on. It's also, well, recent enough versions are in Debian. Apparently I just found out it's in FreeBSD as well, and there's RPMs around the place. There are people who package sound software for Linux at various computer music centers and things like that. So it's pretty easy to get your hands on binaries, and it's very easy to get your hands on tarballs just there. Minimal dependencies, just the minimum it needs to run, a bit of GTK action, and X11 and OSS, just normal kernel sound, and you're away. This is all about fun with Scrubby, so what you're probably wondering is, what the hell is Scrubby? I've told you what Sweep is, it's the program. Scrubby is this dude there. He just sort of appeared on my computer screen one day and sort of been taking over my life ever since. Scrubby's a lot of fun. We'll see what he can do in action. Just brief acknowledgements. People who've made this possible, Pixar and my employer CSIRO, who've let me work on this. So I'm very, very lucky to have to be able to work on what's my hobby and what is just a whole lot of fun. I'll talk about that history and so forth tomorrow a bit, and maybe a little today. In this tutorial now, though, it's really going to be about how to use Sweep and what you can do with it. So I'm going to take you through basic editing and the kinds of processing and effects you can do on audio. And the plan is to do the first two things up until the break, then we'll take a bit of a break, and then we'll come back and do some fun stuff, doing recording and live mixing and DJing type stuff that you can do with this software. In order to get through this stuff, it's not just a matter of, it's an editor, you know, like, you know how to use Emacs or Vi or something, and you can cut and copy stuff. I'm sure you can, you know, until you sweep and do that, sure. There's a lot of audio knowledge that is sort of implied. It's easy to cut stuff up and make it sound awful. So what I'm going to try to do is give some indication of how to cut stuff up and make it not sound too awful, make stuff blend nicely, make stuff not be too jarring or clicky or too distorted or whatever. And also give you some idea of what the various effects that are available, what plugins do, and why you'd use them, as opposed to just, ooh, this sounds really cool. It goes, wow, I want to play with that, you know, like how you can do subtle sort of mixing and editing. What situation you use different effects in, what sort of audio you do them in, that kind of thing. The second half with recording and live mixing is pretty specific to Sweep, but you'd use the general sort of knowledge of audio and of processing and stuff. You can do that while you're doing all the fun and funky stuff as well. The other thing is, tomorrow I'm doing a talk in Alexandra at 2 p.m. which is going to be slightly different. It's not going to be, this is how to use it and this is how to get cool stuff done with it. It's more just going to be me ranting and raving and just talking about Linux audio hacking, because that's a bit different to a lot of other areas in Linux programming. A bit more silliness, because people who haven't come here will want to find out what this Scrubby character is all about, and you'll want to get some more of him because everyone wants more of Scrubby. And then I'll do the thing where I daydream about what I'm going to do in the future and, you know, where this project is going, which everyone does, and then you'll hold me to it next year and I'll go, oh, yeah, I got this done, not that, whatever. But I don't really like to daydream too much about the future, but I'm pretty certain about what I can do with that. But that's tomorrow's talk, so that's the difference between the two. This is all about how to use it. Tomorrow we'll be doing, I'll just rant on a bit, it'll be a whole lot of fun. Today, however, it's a serious tutorial. We're going to learn how to use this software, how not to make crap audio with it. No ranting and raving, none of that. I want you all to pay attention and be very focused on the task at hand. No ranting whatsoever. What I'm going to talk about now is motivation behind this software, how we use it, why it's been designed the way it is, which in the Linux audio community at first when I put this out, I sort of got hassled for a bit. It's like, dude, that's not an editor, you know? It's a DJing tool. What is that? And I'm like, no, it's a really usable editor, you know? Basically what I've found is that, well, I was hacking on this. I'll tell you briefly the history. I started this project about 3 years ago, mid-2000. I was like, oh, there's no sound editors. I want a sound editor, you know? So I took a sound tracker, which is a tracker sequencer thing. It's got a little, it's a little built-in sound editor. You know, sort of does the job. It's good. And first up, I did a few patches on that and added, like, reversing and fading or something. And then I thought, well, stuff that, I'll, you know, make a whole standalone sound editor out of it. So I took the Wave widget out of that, which was this little graphy thing, and then just turned it into Sweep's whole pretty interface and made it just a big window that does that and lets you do processing, lets you do more complex stuff. And this was about 3 years ago, and I sort of did a half-assed job at it, and then I got bored. And then early last year, about a year ago, to the day almost, I got this random email from a guy at Pixar who said, we want to evaluate Linux for use in animation production, and we want to use your editor because we like the key bindings. I'm like, okay, whatever. And at this point, this was Sweep version 0.1, which was just crashing and segfaulting everywhere. And I was like, oh, at first I thought it was some kind of joke or something. And I'm like, oh, okay, you want that, okay. And they wanted a few features and gave me a little contract, and I'm like, oh, I'm very happy. And so I did this stuff, and I thought, well, you need these features over here. Right now the software's over here, and there's this big gap in usability and crashing and stuff like that, which I need to fix before I can, you know, honestly, like, say, I'd use this, you know, and I'll be proud of it. Because you can't sort of, like, ship these people software and have it just go, you know, every couple of minutes when they press the wrong button. And so then about that time, I was thinking, well, what are they comparing against? They're moving away from a Windows platform, I think, to do... there was a whole lot of stuff about them going to OS X and stuff as well, but they were moving away, as far as I understand, from a Windows platform and normal sound editors, and they're just editing small files, and I thought, right, well, okay, this is free, but Sweep's got like a hundredth of features of something like SoundForge. Why, you know, what's the most important thing I work on to make it work, to make it do the job? And so I started buying all these kind of magazines and trying to learn about what sound software is actually all about, as opposed to just what I thought it would be about. And I read this review of the latest version of SoundForge that had come out and had all these new whiz bang features and whatever. But the first paragraph of the review said that the most important feature in any sound editor is usability. It has to be usable. You have to be able to just get around the file and do what you want to do. Nothing else matters. And that's what they were basically judging SoundForge on. And I'm like, right, okay. So, you know, most editing tasks are actually pretty simple. People cut and move sounds around and process them, and they know what they're doing, and let's just make that easy to do. So this principle kind of applies to any editor, really. I mean, it's not just something to do with sound. 90% of the time that you spend in a data viewer or a data editor, you're not actually editing. You're not always just, you know, hacksawing away in binary. You're actually sort of finding the bits that are interesting, you know. Finding the bits of the file that need a bit of editing done to them, find the bits that you can keep, find the bits that you want to move around and swap or whatever. So 90% of the time you spend, you're just zooming around in the file, trying to find stuff. And what had always really shat me with audio software is that you get this little window with literally just a sort of a line graph of which represents the waveform. And the waveform is just the PCM samples that you've recorded, that your sound card's gone, beep, there's a sample here and a sample here and a sample here. Whereas what we hear as humans is the whole you know, chorus of frequencies and sounds, and we can distinguish different sounds over here and there, and birds and people, and we can pick out voices across the other side of the room and stuff like that. So just having this really simple interface, it just always annoyed me. Like, you'd look at this graph and it would always, when you zoomed out looking at a whole file, it would look like just a big blob. And you go, oh, I'm here, or I'm here. And you couldn't really see much else. You could see it sort of louder here and softer there, and that's it. So I thought, right, we'll make it prettier, and we'll make it easier to move around in. So we'll just get down to actually looking at sweep first. And in fact, we won't even play anything right now. This file I'm loading up is one that someone on the OggVorbis list, or someone posted to the OggVorbis list for trying out different encoders and checking how well audio encoders work, which is why it's got slightly different artifacts in each channel and stuff like that. It's a very subtle sort of file, except it's a really boring piece of synth music. Okay, now, so we've got this waveform on screen. The top half is the left channel, the bottom half is the right channel, so this is a stereo file. And you can see it's got different colours in there, orange and the greys. Most editors will just sort of give you just the grey bits as one big blob, and it's really sort of annoying to see. You see also there's a texturing in there, it's sort of like got this 3D effect on it. And the idea is that the waveform looks like a solid object that you're editing and cutting up and moving around or whatever. It's not just some abstract weird thing that, ooh, you can sort of touch at a distance. And I really hated that. So I wanted to make it feel as solid as possible. The grey bits there are the peaks, so it actually finds which bits are loudest, and the orange bits are sort of the average energy. And you can zoom in and out, so use the buttons there, you can zoom right in down to the individual sample values, which all that a sound wave actually is when it's stored in the computer is just a long sequence of numbers, that's all. And in a file like this, a stereo file, they just stored the left sample, the right sample, the left sample, the right sample. So, you know, 40,003, 20,008, 48,009, minus 24,000, I'm not going to go on, but you get the idea. And that's what you're editing. It's very simple. Whereas, you know, like I said, what we hear is totally different. So I want to make it easy to get around. Just then I was using the mouse wheel to zoom in and out, which is something I stole from SoundForge because I thought that was cool. Also over here you've got these weird numbers there. This is one of the first things I'll sort of have to explain is that those numbers are in decibels, which sound people seem to use. And at first I was like, oh, you know, it's one up. Before it was just 0 to 1, and you do stuff from 0 to 1 and 0 to 1, and you think, you know, 0.5 is half as loud or whatever. Decibels measure more how humans actually hear sound. It's logarithmic. And instead of working from 0 upwards, you work from the maximum signal level down to minus infinity both ways, such that something that's got double the number is twice as loud as far as we hear. And once you get used to it, it's a lot nicer to work with than just typing in floating point numbers all the time and stuff. To get a bit more detail, you can zoom that in and out. I'm doing that with the mouse button there. There's keys for that as well, but anyway. So you can zoom around, you can find details. That's all good. We're not really having fun yet, are we? Okay, so audio is no fun if you can't play it, right? And most editors just sort of, you know, press play and it plays. I thought, nah, stuff that. So okay, here we can play and pause the file, and we can do loop playback and. Play a selection like that, for example. Wait a minute. I'll just make a really annoying little loop. Okay, so you can loop stuff, and that's actually kind of useful when you're working with sounds because you just sort of want to find a bit you're interested in, just keep hearing it while you're processing it or whatever. It's also useful for editing drum loops and things like that, of course. And then some bastard friend of mine at work said, why don't you make it be able to play backwards? And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll do that then. So it's a little backwards. Okay. Which I can't really justify in terms of editing as much, but it's fun. Okay. And so you can do all that looping backwards and stuff like that, and we'll get into that. Get into a bit more fun stuff like that with that later. The most important bit about Sweep, though, and the thing that separates this from other sound editors and the thing that... I'm not going to kick SoundForge's butt this year, but the thing that differentiates Sweep from existing sound editors is the scrubbing. And scrubbing in a digital media editor of any kind, it's a common thing in video and it's half common in audio, is something which lets you move the play position around a little bit and sort of say, okay, I want to jump over here and just, you know, start playing from there instead. And I thought, well, I can go one better than that. I'll make it sound more like a, work like a vinyl record or something. So normally what you can do is, you can sort of click here and go, I want to be there instead. Okay. And SoundForge is kind of like that. You've got this sticky little interface. I hate it. So, so Scrubby appeared. Okay, so there are a few ways of scrubbing in Sweep. And basically what it does is it gives you this vinyl sort of interface where instead of just having one playback speed and you can listen to stuff and you can move the cursor around, you can actually just like... drag it around. This tool here. Alrighty, this tool here is Scrubby. Scrubby is a scrub tool, and Scrubby's a lot of fun. Okay. Scrubby, you'll see there, is a smaller version of this dude there, which is based on the stylus on a turntable. And it just sort of appeared on my screen one day. I took that little icon that was 16 pixels, and I expanded in the GIMP, and then boom, there's Scrubby, and I'm like, oh! Scary eyes, dude. And then he just jumped into my software. And Scrubby is really useful because you can find the bits of sound that you're editing. You can just drag the stylus around and work with that. I did a course at a radio station years ago, just learned how to do edits on reel-to-reel tapes that big. And what you do there is you get your interview or whatever that you were editing, and you dub it onto these huge tapes, and then you put it onto the tape machine, and you'd move the wheels around, and you'd listen to it, and you could hear exactly where it was, and you'd get out a pencil and a pair of scissors or something, and you'd mark on the tape the bits you wanted, and then you'd physically chop the tape and cut it together with, tape it together with a bit of tape, right? Very hands-on, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of thing, just no undo on that. But what was really cool is that you had this tape system, and you had playheads that the tape was physically running against, and you could just move it back and forth, and you could hear exactly what was happening and the point of the file that you were editing. And often what people do in a digital editor where you don't have that is spend a lot of time zooming right into the final, right into the samples down here at the lowest level, and then back out again and in again and out again, just to find the bits that are interesting. Okay, so whereas with Sweep, you can sort of, with the select, and once Scrubby started invading stuff, I put Scrubby into the selection bit as well, so that when you drag the selection, you can hear what's going on there. So you can hear the loud bits here, and the big bangs there, or whatever. There's not really enough quiet bits to find quiet parts in this file. But, so basically you can see that... Okay, so you can sort of find where stuff starts and ends, and you don't really need all the time to zoom into the lowest levels just to find a good enough place to cut. Okay, so... No, it's playing it slower or faster as you're moving, so it's sort of... I'll go into detail on this tomorrow, but it just does what... turntable does whatever, actually the pitch goes down as you sort of slow it down or whatever. I did actually have another version before which was repeatedly playing it, and then you don't get the pitch shift, but you get more sort of aliasing happening. So this way is kind of nice because it feels like what people are used to with tapes and vinyl and stuff when you're editing that, and you can really just sort of get it down to, you know, you play something which is just the start of someone's word or whatever, and drag it out over a few seconds and you find exactly the bit that you want, and then you edit from there. So, so basically the point with this, with the usability here, was to make it feel solid, make it feel like something you can just drag around in and always know where you're at. So obviously the problem with audio is that, with an editor for audio, is that all you've got is a picture on screen, and that represents what you're meant to be able to hear. And if you're not hearing stuff constantly, if all you're doing is seeing this waveform and then chopping that around, you're basically doing image editing on that, it feels like. And then you press play and go, oh, what did that sound like? Oh, that wasn't quite right. Oh, I better go back and, you know, fix it up or whatever. So here I wanted to put the audio into it through the whole process as you're playing with it. Anytime you touch the file, you hear what part you're actually playing with. You're not just looking at some graph and going, bang, oh, I don't know, it's around here somewhere. This way you can just hear it and go, yep, that's all good. It makes it a lot more fun to work with, it makes it a lot more fluid to work with as well. So you've got the audible feedback. You can scrub on the timeline, you can drag the scroll bar around, which confuses people sometimes. So you can scan through the file easily like that. And Scrubby, which is a separate tool that is, does nothing but that. Alrighty. Nor am I. Sweep is the program, Scrubby. I can tell you. I mean, he's taken over a whole bedroom in my house, okay? I mean, just my hacking room is just Scrubby's room. It's just insidious. And he's going to start taking over more of my software as well, so that's why they're really two separate entities, and I'm not sure which one is more powerful. And I don't think I'm in control either. Okay, so that's the basics of just, that was just moving around in a file, right, playing it, finding out where you're at. And like I said, that's 90% of what people do in any editor of any description anyway. And I mean, in Sweep, you can just do that. You can just play and scrub and that's all. And we'll probably spend, you know, the latter part of this tutorial doing just that, not doing much editing. Because it is fun. There is fun stuff you can do with it. But, you know, it's hard as an editor and you do want to be able to edit stuff. The next bit that I thought, what next? Extended selections. Simple thing in any other program. Most audio editors don't do it. And I've just done random bits of stuff with the GIMP before, and you know, with the GIMP image editing, you can have multiple bits of regions of stuff, complex shapes and things that you're editing and cookie cutting out and stuff like that. It's very useful. So I thought we'll do the same kind of thing with Sweep, so you can, rather than just saying select from here to here, you can do extended selections. Very exciting. Does exactly what you expect, so select that bit, press control, select that bit as well, whatever. And you've got an extended selection. And I'll let looping on just to annoy us all. So you can play just the selection. And once you've got that, then you can also do nifty stuff, like you can invert the selection. I'll use the right mouse button menu here. Invert selection will select all the bits that will invert that bit. So that's kind of nifty, so you can find a bit of a file that you're interested in and then work on the rest of it instead or whatever. And about the same time at work we were doing some stuff on segmenting speech and audio and things like that. And so this is useful for doing that as well, where you can find gaps between words and chop them out and find bits that different people have said and that kind of thing. I'll show you a bit more of that kind of stuff later when we play with files. That's a simple thing, and it just makes it more powerful to edit with, to get work done. You're not limited to just working on the time a little bit. All right, you've got cut and paste. I'll show you that. And you've got unlimited undo as well with a history. So I already did some undoing here. I can show the history. You can see all the edits that you've done, including the selections you've inserted. Well, that's all we've done. We haven't actually cut anything, but you can move back and forth through that and replay the things that you've done, and that works with all the processing and recording and stuff like that as well. Alrighty. Let's go into the... Ooh, I just did that, didn't I? I did the invert selection. show you the select all and select none. Does exactly what you expect. Don't really need to go into this. Select all, select none. Okay, hooray. And when you've got a little bit, you found the bit you're interested in, you can zoom to selections, the first option on the right menu. So you can just go, I want this bit, bang, let's see it. Okay, so makes it easy to move around and find interesting bits to work on. To edit, for example. So basic edits, you can crop and delete and clear stuff. So you can say, right, this is a great file, but you know, I really only like this bit here. It's exciting. So you press the crop button here, and then get rid of all the rest of the file, and that's all you've got left. Last rendering bug. Okay. Undo that. You can crop, and crop's more interesting with standard selection. So if I crop that, I'll get just those bits with silence in between. So you can chop out someone's words and then save them to a separate file and keep the timing between them as well. Delete stuff and just clear bits. Very simple. So if I don't like that bit at all, I'll totally chop it out, hit delete, bang, that comes together, which is different to clearing it and doing it, making it silent, putting some pauses in. Cut and copy. I know this is, I just want to go through this in detail. Cut and copy is obvious. You can get a bit here and copy it, and then we can paste it in over here. Now, there's three different ways of pasting. You don't just sort of paste, well, paste insert is probably the one that's similar to in text editor or something, where you just paste and just goes, the bit you've copied just gets inserted into the file. There's also paste mix, where you can mix what's in the clipboard into the existing file. Here we've got a little DB sliders where you can see how much of the clipboard you want and how much of the destination file you want. So you can say, I want none of the destination file whatsoever, and then you're overriding it totally. Or you can say, like, you know, make that a little bit quieter and leave that the same or whatever, you know. And you can mix two parts in, so you can do interesting compositing and stuff. And crossfading is a similar kind of thing, except instead of mixing this much of the clipboard and that much of the input file, you can make here, we've got the clipboard ramping up into it, and what was there before gets gradually quieter during the part that gets pasted. So you can blend from the sound that you're cutting into the sound that was there before. So you can do a sort of a more soft soft edit, and you're not totally overriding it, and you can make it sound more natural and confuse people, depending on the material that you're working with, of course. Okay, so that's they're the basic editing things, and if you're working with speech, with you know, with interviews and putting together jingles on a radio station or something, or putting sound effects in place into a movie or something like that, then this is the kind of stuff you're actually working with. You're getting a sound effect and then you're mixing that into the existing soundtrack, or you're getting a jingle and then you're sort of making that fade into the start of the interview or something like that. So these are the kind of tools that you use commonly without really doing, even if you're not doing any processing or anything, this is your bog standard cut, copy, paste, and funky ways of pasting as well. Alrighty, so we'll just get into what Tweep actually works on audio files, obviously. First kind of files it works on are PCM files, WAV files, AU, RAW files as well. And they're generally uncompressed, and it uses a library called LibSoundFile, which is a very robust library by a guy in Sydney called Eric De Castro Lopo. It supports all the different formats that these files support, so you can, you're not just limited to CD quality WAV files, for example, CD quality being 44.1K, 16-bit stereo audio. You can go up to 32-bit, you can have floating point data, you can have any number of channels as well. The last line there are some other codecs generally used in telephony and voice stuff, which provide a bit of compression, or some of them do. So you can use this in those kinds of applications as well. Also support some compressed file formats. The main two are Ogg Vorbis and Ogg Speaks. They're, you've probably heard of Vorbis. Vorbis is a sort of replacement for MP3 kind of thing. Totally free and unpatented, and it's better quality as well. And it's targeted for general audio stuff, for music, which is about as complex as audio gets. Whereas Speaks is targeted directly at speech. It understands what speech is like and the kinds of frequencies and dynamics that human voices have when you've got a recording of one voice. So you can use it on telephony. It's used in internet phone stuff, in GNOME phone and things like that, if you're talking between two GNOME phone, a GNOME meeting, whatever it's called. I can't remember. Anyway, Speaks is a very, very good sort of compression. We'll play with that in a little while. You can load MP3s into Sweep, but you can't save them out due to patent restrictions. I'll show you that, because this is fun, and if you're into the politics of this stuff, then you'll love it. So let's say we've got this drums work file, and we think that's really cool. I want to save it as an MP3. And Scrubby goes, I can't support it in free software due to patent licensing restrictions, and goes and rants at people, that kind of thing. He tries to be polite, but you know, please use Ogg Vorbis format instead. Okay, we can do that. We'll play with that stuff later. So basically, they're the main kinds of files that you can work with, load up and then save as any of those things. It's important here that these ones here, the WAV files and so forth, they're completely lossless. The compressed ones are lossy. And the way they work is they use psychoacoustics, they use an understanding of human hearing to take out parts of the file that you can't generally hear. So it's totally different to normal file compression, where you just use information theory and get the same amount of info into less data. It loses information, and for that reason you shouldn't use Ogg Vorbis and things like that when you're in the middle of an edit, when you're sort of saving intermediate edits and you're going to come back to work on the file the next day or whatever. You should always save out to uncompressed formats like this, and you can load the data back in and work with it later. Yep. Yes, I do intend to support FLAC. FLAC is a lossless format which nevertheless is compressed. So it's, I think, about half or less the size of the equivalent WAV file, depending on the source material, of course. FLAC has recently moved into the Ogg stable, or they've taken up the Ogg container format. And yeah, I'll be supporting that soon. I'm about to rework some of the file loading and saving stuff anyway. That'll be a good opportunity. Okay, so basically, like, you know, if you've got your big editing session done, save it out as Ogg Vorbis or Speaks or something, then load it back in. You're always going to be losing quality and degrading it. So as long as you're working on the file, work on it in WAV format or something like that, and then export out to Vorbis or Speaks at the last step if you can, depending on how much you care about the sound quality. But it will just get worse and worse if you're not careful. Okay. So we've covered the editing that you can do, chopping, moving stuff around. You can load up files and you can save them out. But then we want to do some more funky, fun stuff. We want to make the sound different. We don't just want to move it around. So you want to use a bunch of plugins for that. There's a really vibrant Linux audio developers community, a mailing list called Linux Audio Dev, and lists that go with that, a user list as well for people who are playing around with stuff and not necessarily hacking. And Linux Audio Dev a couple of years ago made up this API for plugins. If you're familiar with plugins on other systems, VST on Windows and Mac, or audio units on Mac or whatever, they're sort of more powerful but different ways of affecting audio. Those ones are basically standalone whole programs kind of thing that you can pass audio through, and they've got pretty GUIs. And if you've seen people working on VST stuff, they're very pretty. I mean, you know, there's ones with 3D people singing along and stuff like that. You know, I mean, there's toys like that, and there's really powerful ones as well. And there are ones which cram 100 million little dial buttons onto a bit of the screen as well. LabSpa is completely different. It's this simple plugin API. Now it's version 1.1. There's over 100 plugins. They're very powerful. There's different things. And they're really just signal processing functions in a little shared library that any program can load up and use for their own needs. And that's really cool because different programs can have different styles of GUI, different styles of interaction. So something like sweep, you might select a region of the file and then choose a plugin and apply that plugin to the selection. Sweep will bring up a parameter window and you can change the numbers and then go bang, do it. There are other kinds of software which let you route filters together and get incoming audio from here and pipe it up to the network and put stuff in between and stuff like that. Completely different kind of application. And they can also use the LabSpa plugins and they can build completely different styles of GUI, ones which are persistent, which where the plugins, you know, you can change the routing and change the numbers on the fly and work on streams and stuff like that. So as is common, you know, it's a unique sort of way that you've got really small things that just do one thing really well. LabSpa plugins are just like that. They're just functions, they work on audio, that's it. And that's cool, because it also means that all the plugins look consistent within each app. So you load up any plugin in Sweep, you know, you get the same boring kind of dialogue. None of this interesting 3D people singing or anything like that. It's all very serious. All right, so we'll look at some of those. The main two ones there, Richard First is one of the guys who started the LabSpa stuff, and he's one of the main authors of the standard. And he put out this computer music toolkit with some filters and compressors and delays and stuff, and he got this Freeverb code from elsewhere and put that in there. Steve Harris has just been working like crazy lately and making a whole bunch of really interesting filters and cool effects, and starting to get, like, we've got all the basic things, and now starting to get more interesting ones as well, which we'll play with. Okay. So anyone have any questions so far? This is just all the basics about editing and loading stuff. And we'll play with that. We'll play with the filters. Yep. It's not multi-track at the moment. That's one of my daydreaming things that will very likely happen this year because I've got the code already. I just need to write an interface for it. But yeah, it'll get there. It's not multi-track, it's multi-channel, which means that you can load up these files and they can have not just left and right or just mono, they can have as many channels as you want, and you can add and remove channels and work on them. Yep. This version of Sweep is not designed for huge files, it's not designed for destructively editing a recording of your band or whatever. It's really designed for working with small files, instrument files, sound effects, and stuff like that. I mean, what I sort of cobbled together and got going usably fast was for Pixar to be able to do sound effects and stuff and time things. It's not designed for you know, for laying down 8 tracks of guitars each an hour long and, you know, mixing them and stuff like that. Yeah, basically this sweep is very inefficient. It just like loads everything into memory and works with it. That makes it really easy to interact with. Everything's just local and just works and you can scrub around and it's all good. I'll have to admit, I do have another library which can do all that kind of stuff on disk and I need to write an interface for it. And that's probably what I'll spend this year doing, but not there yet. But at least this has been a really good experiment in usability and it's very useful for small files. Any other questions before we have a bit of a musical interlude? All this talking about Sweep and no actual playing with it. I quit that. That song bores me. Okay. All right, so let's play around. First thing you do when you load up, you get this little excellently annoying dialogue saying, "Hello, my name is Scrubby. Welcome to Sweep. Would you like to?" And you go, "Oh, what'll I do? If you create a new file, it'll ask you how big you want it to be and that kind of thing. If you load an existing file, you can load one up. And that's what we're going to do right now. This is a recording, a very raw recording by a band that are friends of mine in Sydney. And you'll hear the recording quality is not necessarily the best. I think it's even a mini disc on the floor as they were playing or something like that. All good, but let's have a bit of a musical interlude and listen to this. these damn users called this song major minor A flat because they didn't have a name for it. Obviously that was a nice interlude so I could finish my coffee, but what we're going to do now, you probably heard the sound of that file, was the sound of that recording. It seemed sort of really muddy and obviously it wasn't excellently recorded. I had a mic on the floor and then they all sort of played, and a lot of the high end was sort of missing. It felt really sort of bassy and like you're in an enclosed room or something like that. Now, I'm quite tempted now to just sort of go, right, how can we can fix that? We can make it brighter in the high end and things like that. Which we will play with. And okay, we'll see how we go. My thing beeping. What's beeping? It's this thing beeping, I think. Someone set this console to evil. Okay, I think it'll be right now. Just getting a bit excited about its levels. All right. We're going to fix this up. We're going to make it brighter. Let's do that. So we'll find... Okay, from there. All right, so you can hear how it's all sort of blended in, sort of not very crisp and clear. Okay, so we're talking about frequencies there, and what we'd really like to be able to do is make some of the high frequencies a bit more pronounced and differentiate the low ones a bit. We'll use a, okay, I'll go down to the process menu here. We've seen before the edit menu, cut, copy, clear, crop, and the paste. The process menu has all the plugin filters in there. And just like the GIMP, if you're familiar with that, you can just go and choose any of these plugins. And here you see there's over 100 of them, different kinds of things. Okay, so what we're going to do first is change some of the EQing on this, which basically means changing the frequency components in some way. If you've seen a graphic equalizer on a stereo, then you'll know the kind of thing I'm talking about, where you've basically got a whole lot of sliders, and each one is related to a particular sort of range of frequencies. So you've got some to control the low ones down here and the high ones further up. So you can see this window here is kind of like a graphic equalizer, tilted sideways. The very lowest one, shelving one, is the sort of cuts everything off from below about 50 hertz, as much as you say, and right up to here, 20k at the top. And that's about the range of human hearing from, well, basically from about 20 hertz to 20k is what most people say is about the range of human hearing. So here we've divided that up into little bits and we can change any of them as much as we want. Okay. You'll see how they're all set to zero, which means no change. And you'll see when I change the numbers that they sort of go from about 30-odd up there down to some number like 60-odd. You know, what does that mean? That's this dB thing again. So zero means no change. A bit numbers a bit more positive mean make a bit louder. Negative mean make it a little softer. And zero that again. Normally stuff we go, right, you know, I've got this this book here, right? Basic effects and processes. This will tell you everything you need to know to get started about affecting stuff and about how to use these kinds of filters. I mean, this is all talking about real world effects and modules that you can plug in and, you know, gear that costs thousands of dollars and you can wire it together and have a room full of it and it's all good. And you read this kind of thing and you go, right, if I add a bit of a boost at about 3 kilohertz, then I can make it sound really brighter and punchier, you know? And that's all good. So we go, right, what do we do? So here we are, about 2.5k. I'll sort of bump that up a little bit. So I'll just be clueless and just bump it up heaps, okay? 17 dB is quite a lot, considering that, like, here about half level is about 6 dB going down. We'll bump that down. What happens here? Except that it didn't really have any brightness to start with, so maybe next. Okay, so we can sort of loop on that, and we can flip back and forth between how it sounded before, how it sounds now. So it was really muddy before, now it's just a little bit much brighter. Alrighty, we can apply that to the whole file if you want. Correct. All good. So we can fix that damn recording. Now I've totally failed to explain what I really wanted to get at here. I wanted that to totally screw up so that I could tell you that the real thing to do is to record it right at the source. To get the right signal down on tape, set your mics up properly, get the people to play it again if they screw up or whatever. Get it down on tape, because once it's down on tape, once it's through the microphone, you can't take it again. You can't. All you can do is change the information that you've got on your hard disk or on your tape. You can't add too much new stuff. You can't fix words as easily or anything like that. It's a lot harder if you want to do that. Okay, but here, you know, it was a muddy recording. We got rid of some of the muddiness. That's all cool. Question? Oh, that's a good idea. No. Yeah, a script-through thing, that's something I really wanted to do with this. I mean, when I started out on Sweep a few years back, I was like, oh, I love the GIMP, I'll be able to do scripting and stuff and do all that. And I haven't got around to that yet, but that would be nice. Yeah, what is needed is nice ways to plug together labs for plugins, and I'll probably start a big thread on Linux Audio Dev about that as soon as I get back. Oh, yeah, Martin. Sorry? Change the levels as it's processing? No, not currently in Sweep. What we want for that in a sound editor is to have envelopes where you can draw lines up and down through the selection and say, you know, this, I want the value of this EQ level to, you know, raise and lower and stuff like that. Which would kind of be nice. In some ways, it also makes it a lot more complex, but that's parameter envelopes, and that's down on my daydreaming list for this year, one of the main things. Okay, yeah, so the way LadSpa has been designed is for use both in offline editors like this and also in real-time sort of streaming setups. And the way it works is that you get an input block of audio, the plugin gets an input block of audio like as much as the program wants to give it. So here, like, you know, I'll feed it a tenth of a second at a time or something like that, let's say. And then the plugin does what it does and then puts out a tenth of a second of audio. So in a live sort of audio routing program, a filter network thing, you can grab a plugin here and a plugin there and a plugin there and chain them up through each other, and then while the signal's coming in, while you've got a microphone plugged in or whatever, you know, change the sliders or change the level, the parameters on each one, and get interesting effects happening. And that sort of models what you have in a studio where you've got all these expensive bits of gear where each one of these 100 plugins is a, you know, $2,000 unit you bought from some music store, and, you know, it's the size of this box or whatever, and you know, you plug them together with as much wiring as you've got in the back of any of your machine rooms, and you know, and then you can go and run around and twiddle knobs and stuff like that. So you can imagine a bit of software where you've got that whole machine room full of big bits of equipment and little knobs on them, and you cram the whole thing into a screen like that, and then you've got the sort of filter networky, you know, PC studio-based system, and yeah, they're fun to work with. But obviously, usability and complexity is something to work on there. I'm ranting. I'm going to stop that. Any other questions while we're at this? Okay, cool. So that was EQing. So we played with this EQ thing. We did. What I intended to do was a totally botched job of being completely unsubtle, except it seems this bit of source material needed a bit of unsubtleness anyway. It needed a bit of a whack at the high end, and we gave it that. So all we did, we just moved two sliders, right? We just, like, did that and that or something like that. I won't do it again, because then that'll just trash it. That's fine. Let's do that. Okay, so we applied the same EQing again. We've run through another one. And now you can hear it's really pretty much. So, alrighty, let's fix something up. I noticed while it was playing that, that at one point, someone, I'll blame the guitarist, did that. So he's chatting away, he's not paying attention to his playing, and he bumps the microphone. All right. And that's the kind of thing that you can't just remove off the tape as easily, okay? I mean, that's the kind of mistake that you can retake it, you can say, look, dude, just shut up and play that bit again. But we can't do that now. All we've got is the recording that was on the mini disc and on the floor. It was a very special recording session. We can't repeat it, so not we, they. I'm not part of it. So we need to do something with this offensive bump. Look at it. Disgusting, isn't it? Not as bad as that rendering, but anyway. So there's a little mic bump there. All right, we'll sort of zoom in just on that. And we'll just leave it like that. Okay. Now one thing we can think is, right, what is in a microphone bump? You see, when you're playing with this stuff, you need to sort of understand what the characteristics of the different instruments are and different sounds that are in recording. So you learn the kind of frequency ranges and dynamics of voices, of female voices, of male voices, of different instruments. So you know how drums sound, how different drums sound, how you can mix them differently. How different instruments sound, sort of ranges that a bass guitar or a normal guitar has, how an electric guitar works, what you can expect out of a synth and that kind of thing. They're all different sounds and they each have different sort of dynamics over frequencies and you EQ them all a bit differently and it's all very complex and all sounds very, very exciting. And the sound we're interested in right now is microphone bump. And I think, what the hell's up with that? Sounds like there's a lot of sort of low bumping going on there, so we're going to try to EQ it down. Fix everything with an EQ. I know nothing about mixing, so I'm just going to fix everything with an EQ. Alright, so we've just moved some of the low-end ones down a bit, left the rest as they were. I think it's all going to be below about 200 odd hertz. So we do that. And we don't play it looping. Okay, doesn't really mean much. How have we gone? Okay, it's a lot softer than it was before, right? So it used to be a big bump like that, and now it's got like that, but we've still got a sort of bit of an audible click in there. It'd be nice to totally get rid of it. We can do, we could take another approach, for example. We could just amplify it down a bit, so we've got a mono amplifier here. Now this amplifier here, I'll just move that up so we can see what we're doing. Not allowed to. Okay, that's right. So we've got that bump there. We want to just turn down the volume on that little portion of the file, not the whole file. This plugin here is in Richard Fursey's computer music toolkit from 3 years ago or something, and it was kind of just when he chucked in. And it doesn't use that nice DB thing that we were just playing with, that nice human way of working with sound. It uses very mathy thing of having numbers between 0 and 1. Okay, which, or more, okay, whatever you want. Just multiply it by something. Audio is easy to work with. You've just got this big string of numbers. You double all the numbers, the sound is twice as loud. Simple. Okay, we don't want twice as loud. We want it like just a little bit of soft. So multiply it all by 0.2, for example, and bang. We've got a softer microphone bump. But we've still got a microphone bump. We can play with this on and on and on and on, but I think we're running out of time for doing for getting rid of this microphone bump. And sometimes you just need to think laterally, and you think, you know, this recording wasn't really much happening. I was just sort of like, you know, just flouncing along on their instruments. So let's just delete it. Delete. Bang. Gone. Yeah, it would be. You can do all sorts of things. You can, we could grab a bit from near it and mix it in, but you'd always get just little sort of clicks and the same kind of, you know, there's always the frequency dynamics of the instrument are changing, and you get a bit from over here and you put it there and it doesn't really fit in properly. But we can probably get away with what we just did. Let's see how it sounds. All right, so. You can still hear the click. That was me. I bumped. I got excited, really. There would have been a bit of a discontinuity there. So you can, basically, there's a whole bunch of plugins you can massage that kind of stuff with. But really the point is, don't bump the damn microphone during the recording, because pain in the ass to write that kind of stuff. Yep. Okay, what you're talking about is, what exactly do you mean? Sure. Okay, yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, yeah. In LabSpar, okay, there's things like declippers, for example, and declipper just gets rid of saturated audio because this isn't analog tape, this is discrete numbers. And if you record a number that's bigger than here in floating point, bigger than one, or, you know, 16-bit, bigger than int max or whatever, then it distorts. You get this number which is not right, or you get this big stuff which is too loud. And so there's declippers which will get rid of that kind of stuff. As far as getting rid of clicks and pops and things like that, which you're talking about, LabSpar itself isn't quite powerful enough for that because LabSpar is designed to do stream processing. There is a separate project called the GNOME Wave Cleaner, which is designed for picking up clicks and pops and stuff like that on vinyl records. It does a couple of passes of the data first and then cleans that up. That's a different kind of processing. Yeah, we'll see how we can go on Linux Audio Dev with actually making that a bit more accessible, because in GNOME Wave Cleaner, it's a standalone program. It would be nice to be able to integrate it into the other sort of editors and recorders and things that are around. If the stuff in GNOME Wave Cleaner was some kind of plugin or library, which the author is talking about doing, then that would be could be used. A program like that. We tend to use libraries just for to get faster processing and do it in process where possible for that kind of thing, rather than piping it out and that kind of stuff. Does that answer your question? Or I'll move on. Yep. Okay. That sounds possible. A lot of these ones, I mean, they do have to work in line. They have to be able to work on fixed-size blocks and in one pass, but some of them can keep a lot of memory of what they've seen before and use that to do more stuff. Alrighty. So just to recap with this file here, major minor A flat, we EQ'd some of it because it sounded muddy. We made it sound a bit brighter. We could do that to the whole file, and we attempted to get rid of the microphone bump a few ways. We could play around with plugins all day long and try to get rid of that. We just sort of hacked it out, and the best thing is don't record. Don't screw up when you're recording. That's all good. All right. We'll move on to the next one. This is one of my favorite files ever, and that was a bit of music that we were working with, and with music you have to understand the characteristics of music and instruments and stuff like that. Now we're going to have a recording of speech. This is one of my favorite speech files ever. By Martin Fool down the front here, when he came and visited Scrubby's room one day, and he was, like everyone does, he fell in love with Scrubby. And for that purpose, I've made a special email address that people can send these kinds of things to, because Scrubby likes that kind of stuff. Let's hear it. Okay. Kill that off.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
All right. This is just pure talking, and I think it was Martin talking into this microphone one day, and it was very noisy.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Alrighty. So what are we going to do with that? We need to do some different stuff. Let's pretend we're working this for a radio station or something, and we want to like clean it up so it's, you know, playable or whatever. First thing we'll do, select everything, and we want to get rid of the noise.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Here's this really sort of hissy noise up there. We'll use our magic EQ again, because it's the only thing I know how to use, right? Okay. And that noise was sort of high frequency stuff. What we'll do is we'll move this down a bit. See how that sounds.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Okay, the really hissy stuff is gone. We'll try that again. So you had, yep, Martin. No, that would be cool. I should do that. That'd probably be related to my work, so I should just do it. Okay, let's take a few bands down. Randomly. And you'll see we're going to start.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
The more you play with that, the more you're also distorting the original sound as well. So we're distorting Martin's voice, and we don't really want to do that too much because we want to be subtle. Let's do it. So what we're going to do is we'll go back to kind of how we were before. Okay, so first step, we'll get rid of some noise. We'll get rid of the...
This is Martin
Poole.
I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
By taking that down a bit, that's about it. Okay. Dang.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Okay. Then we'll just have more fun with our EQ because we're still there. And what can we do? We can make him sound thinner or more beefy or something. I shouldn't screw with your voice too much, mate. What I'm doing right now.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs. This is Martin Poole.
Okay, so you can change the characteristics of voices pretty simply like that. Don't want to play with that too much, but what we'll do now is we'll chop it out a bit, we'll tighten it up because Martin's a very relaxed, laid back kind of guy. And we're working for a important radio station and time is money. We can't have him pausing and being relaxed and stuff like that. When I was playing with the GIMP, I discovered this really powerful thing where you can select by color in the GIMP. So you can, you're working on some graphic or something, and you can go, I just want all the orange bits, and it goes and makes this complex selection of the orange bits. I wanted to be able to do that kind of stuff with audio, where you can select the, we can just get the quiet bits or something, interesting bits. So we just made this select by NG plugin. It's very simple. It just does a simple sort of gate over the sound. And it outputs the selection into Sweep. So what I've done here is, won't explain too much, but it's just found bits where the levels dropped off for a little while. Bang. And you can see those bits there that were selected, where he's paused between his words. We don't allow that on our radio station, so we'll just delete them. And
this is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Okay. Very simple edit. And compare that to the laid back original. Oh, sorry. I'll use this program. Okay.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Now.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Okay. So he's a lot quicker. We can speak complete bastards and turn the speed of the playback up a bit more anyway.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs. This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Let's play with that. Yeah, okay, so let's have some fun. So what we want to do is find out what all these plugins are about. I mean, I've said there's 100 plugins here, and all I've shown you is the EQ. Crikey. Sort of silly audio engineer am I. Clueless. Let's play with Martin's voice. So, we want to play with some pitch shifting. We want to make him sound like a girl or something. I don't know. Whatever excites you, we'll turn him down a bit first. Actually, no, this one. Okay, I'll preface this plugin by saying pitch shifting is a very hard problem, and it's a very hard signal processing problem, and let's see how Steve's done. It's by Steve Harris in plugin.org.uk, who codes his butt off in this stuff. Okay, that made it a lot quieter. So what we're going to do first is what's called normalizing the sound. Audio people have completely different words for everything. So, and that's kind of because it came from this whole analog world and then it merged with this computer world, and so there's jargon which is sort of clashes. But normalizing a sound means making it as loud as it can be, basically. Okay, it doesn't really sound girly. It sounds more like some kind of Dalek-y robot thing. But that's what happened. Alright, let's try something again. So what do we have? We have pitch scaler, what's the rate shifter? Another one from Steve Harris. We'll speed it up a little bit. I think this one basically does kind of end before, but... let's not do that one. Okay, so what I want to do now is just play around with the check of time, play around with some of these plugins because they're very interesting. Okay, I've got about 15 minutes before morning tea, so this is all good. Okay, so we've EQ'd him, we've pitch scaled him. We can get some really interesting ones, like this gong model one here. I'll just start off with a silly one. I'm not really sure. Okay, it's got a lot of parameters. And as you can see, they seem to be related to a model of a gong, like, you know, big metal disc. How stiff do you want 0.3 to be or something like that? Luckily, there's defaults in this, so you can just go, whew, whatever, okay, bang.
This is Marshall. I think it's probably smaller than you have.
Okay, so he's stuck in a toilet or something. That's great. We'll play with another one. It's all done. I had some interesting ones written down, so we'll work with that. Okay, the chorus is a good one. Multi-voice chorus. Now, a chorus is an effect. There are some standard effects in audio stuff, which we play with, and the chorus is one kind of like an echo. I should probably echo stuff first. I'll tease you. We'll get to the chorus later. Chorus is exciting. Let's go through some standard effects first. First one we'll play with is a delay. A delay does exactly what you'd expect it to. It adds a copy of the signal sometime later. It makes it sound like screaming into a canyon where your voice comes back to you. So we'll delay it by 0.1 of a second.
This is Martin.
I didn't do that at all. And then we have to deal with the dry and wet thing. Now, I just mentioned that there was this weird terminology in audio stuff. An effect can be dry or wet or some wetness. And what that basically means is how much of the effect you mix back into the original signal. So so you plug in your microphone and you plug in an effects unit and then you route the affected sound and the original sound together and you mix them together to get the actual sound. And what that means is that you can do some really weird effect, but then you just mix like a little bit of that with the original sound and then you get a more subtle sort of thing. So you don't always sound like you're in a toilet or something. You sound like a little bit of you is there and most of you is how you were before or whatever. So okay, so the dry-wet balance here means how much of the delay we're going to have and how much of the original sound we're going to have. Now, you put a sound through a delay and you listen to just the delay, then all you hear is the original sound 0.1 of a second later, okay? We didn't notice the difference. Whereas if we sort of mix in a bit of the original signal, then we should get a mix of the two.
This is Martin Paul. I think Scrubby's more
than MS. Okay. So, that's a delay. And, some reason or other, I think Richard Fursey decided to make 5 different delays with different times that they can have. So.
This is Martin Pool.
Okay. So that's a delay. Delay delays the sound. Another thing we can do then, what do I want to move on to? I want to move on to the multi-voice chorus, damn it. So, That was a simple delay where you just had a copy of the sound later. There are some other delays you can get which have what's called multiple taps, which means that it's like having one which is 0.3 of a second later and another one which is 0.7 of a second, and so they have different copies of it at different signal levels coming in and mixing together within the one unit. A chorus is a similar sort of thing. You get sort of multiple copies of the sound happening, but you do sort of cheap thing where you waver some of the sounds and you make them sound slightly slower and faster and stuff like that, and you move the timing around a little bit, and what you end up with is a sound kind of like a chorus of people talking or singing, because you have similar sounding stuff, just slightly off but not really out of tune, and slightly different timings, which is what you have, of course, when you have a chorus of people singing or talking. They don't talk exactly in time and in tune. So what we're going to do here is we're going to have like 7 Martin Pools, and we'll just turn these up to make it sound bizarre. That's a lot of fun. LFO is a very cool thing from analog music, where a low frequency oscillator, which basically means that you have this unit in your system somewhere that generates a sine wave or whatever at a very low frequency. You can modulate the effect that you're doing, or you can just change the sound, some wavering kind of thing, and you'll hear it a lot in a lot of different kinds of music. We'll attenuate the output, which is audio geek speak, so make it quieter by a little bit, and then see what happens.
This is a partial pool. I think Scrubby is more fun than that.
Okay, so that was 7 Martin Pools fighting with each other. I'll just leave that as it was, because this bit here especially sounds...
This is a partial pool.
Okay, actually I'm not going to be able to fix that with the declipper. This is not going to work. Okay, see how the peaks there just dropped a little bit? I'll undo and redo. We fix those. Did we fix the clicks? Let's find out.
I think Scrubby is more than the name.
Okay, so what I did there is notice that there were some peaks, there were some bits where it was clipping, and just ran the declipper over it very quickly. So instead of sounding
this
like
a
those big pops,
Scrubby is more than the name.
Okay, so we got rid of the clicks and pops. But we still have a bunch of Martin Pools. Sounding very silly. We'll get to that stuff after the break. Alrighty, what else is worth playing with? So we've done part of the chorus. I'll get back to the sound that we had before. Multi-voice chorus, the selector. Okay. So you see, this is the history of what we've done. We EQ'd him around a bit to get rid of the noise. Then we selected the quiet bits, deleted them, and then selected everything we've got. We'll go to that point there before the multi-voice chorus.
Simple. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Okay, we'll pose some different effects. Someone was asking about the Freeverb before. That's a reverb unit. Reverb is one of the other basic standard sort of effects that we play with. And the point of a reverb is that natural sounds in a room or whatever sound warm because you get reflections of the sound coming off the walls and coming off speakers, off the walls and ceiling and seats and people and things like that. And each room has different characteristics. Whereas if you're in a recording studio with just a microphone up close to an instrument, then that's basically all you hear. And so in order to make it sound natural, you add reverb to the sound to make it sound like it's in a concert hall or in a room. Now, what's actually happening with reverb is you're modeling the reflections of the sound waves that hit walls and hit people and come back to you. And it's very complex, and it's not like the echo we had before where you just had two or three repeated versions of the sound. With a reverb, you have thousands of the same sound coming back to you at completely different time intervals. What also happens is you want to model some of the material, the physics in a room, and what actually happens is that low frequency and high frequency sounds move differently, they get absorbed differently by materials. So like in this room, for example, there's people which absorb sounds, there's this soft material and carpet on all the seats, and that will tend to absorb high frequencies. The low frequencies will sort of bounce around a lot more. I mean, this room obviously has very echoey acoustics, and I'm talking through a microphone anyway. So a good reverb unit is more than just a bunch of echoes that tries to mimic that kind of stuff. So what you can actually do is record, get data about how the reverb of a particular room sounds, and then you can apply that to a dry sound, a sound that was recorded straight off a microphone, and you can make a sound, a voice or an instrument sound as if it was played in a big concert hall or in a room like this, which is very echoey, or in a canyon or something like that. And you also want to know the because the characteristics of the sound itself matter, how bassy or how much high end there is in the sound. So you want to take that into account as well. So you've probably seen like on some stereos where you can say this is pop music or this is classical, or I want to make it sound like it's in a big concert hall, or I want to make it sound like it's in a small studio and stuff like that. You can play with the dynamics of the room that you're pretending the sound is in. So what we're going to play with now is Freeverb, which which I think started out just as a bit of code on Windows or something, and Richard Fursey made it into a Labspur plugin. This has a few very simple parameters, which we're going to toy with. So this is the original sound again.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Let's put Martin in a big room. Damping, so that's like the amount of soft material in the room. So if this room, for example, instead of having hard walls and whatever, was just surrounded by cushions and big velvet curtains and whatever, then the sound would get damped a lot. Wet and dry level, we've talked about before, silly words, talking about how much of the original of the sound we're affecting and bringing back in. The width, I'm not actually sure about. I assume it's a stereo width, which means the separation between channels, but maybe it's not. We'll just make it big. I'm not really sure what that one does.
This is not
subtle effect. Okay, so obviously what we did there was made the numbers big to see what would happen. And that's a good way to play with this stuff. I mean, you're all geeks, you like just breaking stuff and seeing how it breaks and how big you can make it break. And this is good for doing that kind of thing with, okay, I'll work out some subtle parameters. Anand. Okay, excellent. I'll do this, I'll make Martin be subtle, and then we're going to get some morning tea. Put Martin in a small room, not much damping, lots of wetness, not much width.
This is Martin's cool. I hate it's already more
than okay, need to learn how to be subtle. Alrighty. So we'll move on from there. After the break, we'll get down to a new song. And now, caffeine. Alrighty, well, I'll get started again. Pants on, Jeff. Pants on. Alright, the two questions I was asked most in the break were, first up, what speed machine am I running here? How powerful is this? How powerful does your box need to be to run Sweep and play with Scrubby and so forth? That's proc CPU info up there. I'm running a 1.1 gig Duron. So it's not, you know, it's not a dual P4 or anything bizarre like that. The other thing that people, of course, noticed was that it was there were slight gaps in the audio when it was switching from one, when the cursor got to the end of the screen and then had to switch back. It's double buffered, and at that point it redraws the whole thing. Of course, that's a problem there. That can be easily avoided by running a latency kernel, having more audio buffering and things like that. My excuse, which was pretty lame for this machine, is that I like to develop on a stock box, so I can think, you know, I'm writing a desktop application that people are running and can just do stuff with, and they don't need to run a Twix kernel, and they don't need to worry about what kind of sound card and buffering and stuff they've got. I should probably run a low latency kernel on my demo box, but I haven't bothered getting around to that. Within Sweep, you can change the latency, the buffering. So here in the playback, there's a configure audio device option. And you can see there that there's just a simple slider that goes from 1 to 10, with which you can change the application latency, and that means the buffering that the app sets up between, that the app sets the sound driver up with. That of course gets, 2 to the power of that plus 1 or something ridiculous like that, but it's just a slider from 1 to 10. So by default, that's normally about 6. When I was running at about 8 now, then you don't quite get the dropouts, whereas if we turn it down to some silly level, then alright, it's being nice to me. Alright, being responsive. So it's always like that. When you want things to fail, they don't fail any. Okay, so with this slider, you can, if you're getting dropouts on your machine, and that means like generally if you've got a slower machine, or if you've got a crappy sound driver, it often happens on laptops that you get really crackly, awful sort of sounds, then you want to set it to fewer dropouts, which of course gives you high latency. When you're up there, then You just lose a bit of responsiveness while you're scrubbing, and that's about the main drawback there. Okay then, so I'm gonna set that down to about 2 and see what happens. Oops, not 1.92. Alrighty, so that'll answer those two questions. Anyone got any more questions about resource usage and stuff like that? Yep. I wouldn't recommend the sound card I'm using. I'm using a Soundblaster Live, which is a good card, but probably past its day. There's some M audio cards, which I've heard rock, but I can't really talk about them because I haven't got one. But they've got Linux support and better quality than the Soundblaster Audigies, which apparently were a bit of a marketing shenanigan. Yeah, I'm using stock drivers for this. That's one of the things I was saying with developing this. I don't want to be running, the latest bleeding edge alpha stuff and the latest bleeding edge down server and the latest low latency kernel and all this stuff and require all that stuff in order to run the program. I want it to run on, stock kernel, stock sound drivers, whatever's in the latest stable kernel. So I'm still working with OSS. It's good enough for this kind of stuff. Seeing where the performance problems are in sweep, and getting rid of them there rather than blaming the underlying system, because it's not really the underlying system's fault if there's, if there's dropouts or whatever. We can fix that within the app. But then, of course, for performance reasons, there's always the option of tweaking your system, of tuning it, of making it low latency and all the rest. Currently, I would not recommend it. Within a few versions, you'd need about 100 odd meg of RAM. Right now, you'd need, it just sort of blows out as you edit. And with Sweep 2, in about a year's time, if I get a caffeine drip, then it'll work fine on any system whatsoever. It's daydreaming. I'll leave that for tomorrow. Okay. We might move on then. With about where we left off, let's see. Call that file. So we left off here. Okay. That was Martin.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scruffy is more fun than Emacs.
I just want to do a couple more things with this file quickly. One of the things, probably the last important main filter that I'd or processor that I'd forgotten to use is a compressor. Now, a compressor in audio is something completely different to any other kind of compression. Like I was saying, there was two worlds sort of colliding with each with their own terminology. And the compressor on audio is not a data compressor. It's totally unrelated to stuff like Ogg Vorbis or GZIP or anything like that. A compressor is a processor on the signal which changes the dynamics of it, makes quieter sounds, or generally this kind of thing makes quieter sounds louder or louder sounds quieter. The point being that if you've got someone who's talking on radio, for example, or you've got someone who's not used to talking in a microphone, and they might just sort of waver and just talk quietly and then talk louder or whatever, and you have this unprofessional sounding signal that gets louder and softer, like this one just did. So a compressor is a box that you put in the signal path, you know, between the mic and the transmitter somewhere, that makes the quieter bits louder or the louder bits quieter. So let's play with this. I guess the name comes from, you'll see what we'll do to the waveform. Two choices, peak or RMS, which means either it tracks the really loud peaks, which you get with percussion and things like that when the drum hits. RMS is an averaging compressor. It just looks at the average sort of signal level, which is more appropriate for instruments and voices and things. So this one here is a simple compressor. We've got a few parameters we can work with. The most important two are the threshold and the compression ratio. We'll see again, this is one of Richard Fursey's ones, so the threshold is a floating point number from 0 to 1 rather than a dB level, unfortunately. That's okay, because you're probably more used to this anyway. Hold on, or is it? I can't remember. No, it's a floating point number. So what we're going to do here is set a threshold of 0.2, so you can imagine 0.2 of the way up from, this, let's say this is 0 in the middle, up to 1, to plus 1 and minus 1 at the bottom, right? So a signal level of about 0.2, that's some way halfway up the waveform. What we want to do is make everything that's above that get a bit quieter. And we don't just want to chop it off totally, we just want to make it quieter. So you multiply everything that's above that point by some number, which is called the compression ratio. So you end up leaving the bits which are quieter than that as they were. The stuff that's louder, you sort of trim that down. So we'll multiply all of that by 0.08, the number I've played with. And you can see there's envelopes you can put on, stuff like that, so you can change the dynamics. You can make it let some loud bits through and then progressively compress them. But we'll just leave them as they are. Okay, so we ran that, and then you'll see the louder bits, we'll just sort of undo and redo. I'm just hitting Control-Z and Control-R to undo and redo. You'll see that most of it has stayed as it was, but the louder bits sort of came down. And the shape of the whole sound seems to have, it's as if like you got a razor and ran across the top and bottom of the sound wave. It's a lot flatter. And I guess that's where the compression name comes from.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
And before compression...
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
I see, before compression, there were more sort of pops with his P's and things, and it just sounded more raw.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Generally, compression, as I've mentioned, it's used in radio for just to keep voice levels constant. It's usually used on any kinds of vocals, and often on pop music, you'll have the whole song just heaps compressed. That makes it always sounds punchy on radio. It works in a noisy environment, so okay, the reason I do it on radio and on talking and stuff is if you're driving in a car and you've got traffic around you and all these noises and stuff, you kind of, if the announcer's voice gets quieter and louder and so forth, then you won't hear some bits. You've got all this background noise. Same kind of thing with pop music. It'll look kind of totally flat. Actually, let's look at some of that just to have a bit of fun. So this is the song that we were just looking at before. Now if I zoom out to the whole file, as this song's loading, you'll see that there's not really much sort of dynamic happening. It's all got the same kind of signal level. It doesn't really get louder and softer or anything like that. We'll compare this. I'm loading up huge files here, and I'm expecting Sweep to just break on me, so don't be too surprised if it goes for a bit of a wonder. This here is the Beethoven first movement of the First Symphony that you heard at the start of this whole tutorial. And you'll see that what's completely different in profile. That's the top window, the Beethoven one, is the 9.5 minute file. The bottom one is about 3 minutes worth of pop music. And you'll see there's a lot more dynamics in the top one than in the bottom one. And if we zoom in on the symphony, then you'll see how you can see where it gets quieter and louder and so forth. There's a problem with the driver on this. Oh, okay, sorry. Okay, so you have more dynamics in classical music than in pop music. Partly so that people can just listen to it in any in noisy situations. So here we've got Martin's voice, heavily compressed. We can amplify it a bit now because it's a soft, because it's all the loud bits have been taken out anyway. We'll run it through the amplifier. It will, I don't know, double the signal or something. Okay.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
You see, now he sounds more loud and punchy and not, well, he wasn't really wavering, but, you know, a more consistent signal level, that's all. And you notice that on recordings. Actually, it's a really subtle thing. When signals are compressed, they sound more professional, probably just because you're used to hearing it on radio and TV. You're used to hearing heavily compressed voices and music. So, okay, so that's a very common process that's used, I guess, late in processing. Alrighty, the last thing we're going to do, just to finish up this file, is save it as speaks, because it's a speech file. You'll see in the save as dialog, there's a whole list of different file types that you can use. There's all the PCM ones, the AIFF and AU, and WAV files and stuff. MATLAB, you can save as MATLAB data using libsound file, which is cool if you're a DSP hacker. You can load it up and graph it and run mathy stuff against it. And below the line, there's the compressed ones, MP3, which you can't use. It just tells you to use OGWorbis. Jeff likes that. You missed that before, Jeff. I'll just show Jeff this because he wants to see it. You try to save as MP3, it says, cannot be supported due to patent licensing restrictions. Isn't that leap? Sorry, guys? I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think it's still okay to open them. I hope so. So we can save this as speaks. I mean, it would have worked that out automatically. So if I type in .spx. And then we get the save as speaks dialog. And with speaks, you've got a just an encoding quality, and you can use a variable or average bitrate mode. The complexity is another number. I'm not sure why he put that in. It's different. Speaks is made for sort of streaming stuff, and it's got really small packets. Like, I'll step back a bit. You'll notice here there's the second tab is the OGG stream one. Speaks and Vorbis and now FLAC and the new video codec, Theora, live inside a bitstream called OGG, which is kind of like TCP or something, except as a file thing, it lets you store stuff with headers and have interleaved streams of multimedia data with some form of synchronization and some understanding of what's in them. And I won't go into details of OGG, but basically you can hack around with that a bit, and in speaks you can say how many frames of speaks data you want in each OGG packet so that you don't have too many headers and things like that. But usually the defaults are fine as you'd expect. In sweep you can remember your encoding options, so if you think this is so good, I want to encode it at level 7 or something, then it'll remember that and you can use that next time. We'll just go with the defaults to see how it sounds. That's meant to come up in the dialogue. Okay, unsupported rate 44100 for speaks encoding. We can't do that. So what we're going to do now, sorry, I forgot this step, is resample the sound. This sound was recorded at 44.1K, which is CD quality. Speaks doesn't quite support that, so we're going to have to move it down to a voice quality. we'll put down to 16K just to see how this works. So that's less samples per second. We'll resample it. Then we'll save it as speaks. Using the defaults, bam. The encoding results, average bit rate 11K. And to compare the file sizes, just so we've gone from a huge web file down to less than 4K. So that's less than 1% saving. To see how that actually sounds, we'll load it up. We'll load up the compressed one, .spx one.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Not too bad. So Speaks is a really good format. I just wanted to do... Okay, that finishes up the Pooley sample. Any questions about this and what we've just done? Jeff? Because that's an interesting question. No, I don't think so. I think it's partly because I wanted to credit those people. I always put the names up in the plugins and in the things like the resample. So resample is using Secret Rabbit Code libsample rate by Eric DeCastro-Lopo, who wrote the libsound file as well. It's got little logos and things like that. Eric did a whole lot of the code for that suite of users. If you try to save as a AF file or something, oops, should have done that. Then it'll bring up the libsound file thing, and I'll tell you that Eric did libsound file as well there. So any hacks on suite for those bits as well. So it's more just to sort of give credit where credit's due. And I've found that encourages library authors to do better work and to, keep going with it if they get the credit that they deserve, So that works pretty well. Also makes the dialogues prettier. Martin? Good call. Alrighty, so we've got this whole compressed thing selected. I was asked to to explain more of the key bindings and things I'm using. This is the process menu. But with the right mouse button, you can also get this right mouse button menu, which also has process on it. Satan Maximizer down here. Where is it? I can't spell. Underwear? Barry Satan Maximizer, of course. By Steve. I don't know. Steve maintains a project of plugins. He writes a lot of them himself. Other people send him ones. So obviously someone called Barry sent him a Satan Maximizer.
This is Martin Poole. I think Scrubby is more fun than Emacs.
Which obviously has no effect on Martin's voice. Let's play with those numbers a bit. Wait, that's K time, new client. Okay.
This is Martin.
All right, so it's some kind of maximizer. I don't want to play too much with plugins with names like that on an expensive speaker system like this, if you don't mind. Okay, that was Martin. Done. We'll move on to. Wait up! I did have one file. Is Jack here?
Yeah.
You rock. Okay, Jack is in this band called Halfstage, and I want to have some fun with this recording of Halfstage. So, as is customary in this kind of tutorial, a brief musical interlude. We'll be right back. right, does it, Jack? Yeah, I think I'm calling it right up. It might just be the buffering, which I turned down to some silly number. On the top of feet, down on his feet, giving a finger to the pitch on his feet. Still know him, that is grim. But you know the secret, never catch him cold. Giving a finger, yeah, he's the man. He's the man with a soft cut pad. Real like a super soul. Built a man with a wonderful world. On the run, he's never in his cheek. Work. Now, Jack, you played bass, didn't you, on this? Alrighty. Which is good because you're not doing the vocals. Not that the vocals are bad, but there was some swearing and I was offended. So, what we're going to do, let's have a bit of fun with that. Everything's fun. Alrighty, we'll select some vocals. I found there's a nice place here somewhere. So, what are we doing? That was a rude bit after that, wasn't it? Let's play with that. Right. So we don't like those vocals, those particular lyrics, so we're going to use a karaoke plugin. It's all good. This one's by Steve. And it just has one simple slider, which is the vocal volume, nice little dB rating, so zero is nothing. We can turn it down a little bit, or we can turn it down a lot. Processes a bit. You'll notice it's a whole lot quieter now, but that's cool because we can just normalize it. Normalizing makes it as loud as it can be again. And this being pretty poppy music, it was pretty loud to begin with, so normalizing seems to work well. Brings it up to a nice decent signal level. Except it was all swearing. That's the problem with that bit. All right, let's not karaoke it so much. He's the man with the long-term plan. Obviously, the shift ends to normalize. Shortcut. You know, this worked in the lab yesterday. So this is a real shame because the karaoke plugin worked for me yesterday on this very bit, and now it's not really doing that much. It's getting rid of a lot of the sound. Oh well, we can't karaoke, which is a real shame because like I had the microphone all ready for it, and we're not going to do any karaoke. And we're not going to get rid of the rude bits. Okay. I didn't want to do much else with that file. I don't want to go scrubbing around in ska music too much because that seems to hurt, to offend people. Not the ska itself, but the scrubbing in ska. I want to save it as an OGG file because just to show you the OGG dialog, basically. Just similar to the speaks one. Pretty. This is the file we want. Half Dave, Jimmy the Finger.OGG. Encoding quality is just one big slider from 1 to 10. And if you don't want to use that, if you want to be elite OGG hacker, then like if you're saving this for a particular kind of streaming environment or something, then you can enable the bitrate management engine in OGG Vorbis. And instead of using Vorbis's sort of best guess, it does an average bitrate thing where you can set the maximum or minimum bounds for your encoding. So if you do that instead, that one gets disabled. It uses this instead. You can set what kind of bitrate you want. Unlike MP3, it's not a hard bitrate. It's just sort of a guide that OGG Vorbis can use, and it will make some bits use less bits if it can get away with it, and it will use those bits to make more complex parts have more bits in them. So it doesn't strictly give you 128, but the average bitrate will be about 128. You can set a maximum bitrate, which is obvious. You know, if your pipe is only so big, you can say, okay, have an average bitrate of this of 128, but whatever you do, don't go above 160 or something. And in some kind of real-time environments and stuff, you want a minimum bitrate as well, where you can't drop below some throughput. So they're the options you can use there. Alrighty. Go to the defaults. Go to how we were. We'll go to that. We'll save this average bitrate just because we think we're elite, even though Vorbis usually does a better job. We'll save. Get this off ready. Bang. There it goes. Vorbis takes a bit longer, and this is a big file anyway. Okay, we'll leave that saving because Sweep's going to deal with it anyway. It'll tell us when it's done. So then we took a break. We're done with those. And now we're going to play with some fun stuff, recording and DJing. Now, I mentioned before that Sweep is not a multi-track recording system to plug all five members of your band into and record them for big sessions and cut and chop them. Not yet. Caffeine drip, maybe. Not yet. But what you can do with Sweep is record little samples, little bits of voice or whatever, and play around with them. And it has the same kind of flexibility with recording that you have with playback. You can do fun stuff with recording, and you can do it live. And that's what we're going to play with now. After that, we're going to do some elite DJing techniques. I'm not an elite DJ as such, but I bought this book, and it's really good. It's called How to DJ Properly, and I can tell you everything you need to know. This book is actually really good. I bought it last week, and it's written by real DJs, and it's more about the attitude of DJing, how to choose records properly, and not beat you up yourself, but we'll get into that later. Now, just waiting for that to have finished. Not quite finished yet. Okay, the way recording works in Sweep, the next thing we're going to cover, is not recording to a disk file and things like that. Like I said, Sweep's limited to working with buffers and memory, and you can scrub around in them and do all kinds of flexible stuff with that. So the way recording works in Sweep is that you set up a buffer first. It works as a filter on that buffer, which sounds a bit silly at first, and is a bit silly in that it's not really what people want most of the time, but it's a lot of fun. So let's go with that. You get that buffer, you select it, and you record into it, and then it's a selection that you processed. You can then undo it. You can then cut and copy it. You can use recording as a sort of ongoing process that you're doing to it as opposed to a one-off thing that you're mastering as the amazing recording you made. Okay, OGG Vorbis is almost done. Okay. So we got a results dialog, same kind of info that OGG Enk gives you back. Tells you how big the file is, 2.4 meg, 2-bit bits of audio. 124K is what the average bitrate came out at, so we asked it for 128K and it came down at 124K, so you know it's better if it figures it needs that, only that much. And we're done. And there's a nice little picture of a fish in there, which is the logo from ZIF.org, or actually from Vorbis itself. All done by Monty. Okay. So, enough with the Half Dave thing. We're not going to do recording karaoke with Half Dave. What we're actually going to do, I'll just close that. We're going to go back to here. I'll just list out the Half Dave tracks. Okay, so you'll see that we went from a WAV file, which I ripped off Jack's CD, down to an Ogg Vorbis. You're used to this kind of stuff, just like MP3s. It's about a tenth the size. So, so you can see the difference between Ogg and Speaks. If we tried to, which maybe I should do that. I'll do a Speaks encoding of Half Dave. Except I won't do the whole thing because we don't want to wait ages for it again. He's a man with lots of fat. Okay, nice vocals there, bit of music. Okay, so we'll crop to that bit and then we'll save that as Speaks and see what happens. See how Speaks works on music. Save. It's a ported sample, right? What a pain. I've got to fix that to do it automatically. Hey? We'll do it as ultra wideband voice quality, which means we'll try to do a better job of it. There's a bit of music in there, so you give it a bit more bandwidth to work with. Resample it, save it as Speaks, take the defaults, done. Okay, average bit right now is 12K, right? So that's about a tenth the size of the OGG file. Hooray! That's awesome. Let's open it up again and see how it sounds. Okay, not too bad for a hundredth the size of the original WAV file, and probably good enough for telephony and stuff. Get rid of some clipping and put some nice filtering in place in the phone system or whatever, and it's good enough. But you know, it's not still not quite CD quality. Not as good as it's not going to pass hearing tests like Ogg Vorbis is. Alrighty. Recording time. Any questions about the compressed formats? Nope. Alrighty. My name is Scrubby. Welcome to Sweep. Would you like to create a new file or load an existing file? This time we're going to create a new file. This is the new file dialog in Sweep. Gives it a random file name, Untitled 1, 1 minute worth of audio at CD quality stereo. That's what we want to work with. All good? Create that. So we've got a buffer like that. And we'll select all because we're doing some late recording filtering type stuff. Hit the record button and brings up this dialog here. Now this is similar to the mixing dialog you saw before where you've got inputs and outputs and you mix stuff together. The way it's set up now is that all you're going to record is the recorded sound, what's coming in through the microphone or whatever. The previous sound is what was in the buffer before. Obviously there's nothing there at the moment. So this is where I'm going to try to think of something interesting to say. I'll try not to be a leap rapper or anything silly like that. I'm so nervous. Okay. So, say hello and welcome to LCA, and we love playing around with this stuff. And Martin Poole is just—he gave us a really neat introduction of Scrubby, and everyone in this room has just fallen in love with Scrubby, and that's really cool. I'm going to stop crapping on. Now then, you'll notice that that didn't come out in the speakers, right? All that happened was the red line moved along and it recorded some stuff. The way Sweep works, because it's just flexible, it's not really a recording tool, it's just a... This bit's where it's just fun, right? This is the second half after the break. Before the break, we did real recording, real world, serious stuff. This is fun. Oh, Martin Poole. And everyone in this room is so in love with Scrubby, and that's... He gave us a really...
Can really confuse you now because you've got two copies of my voice Scrubby going on at the same time.
Everyone in this
so
room
you can't really understand what I'm saying. Cool.
Good, isn't it? Or I can reverse the playback and play that back in Dutch.
And the earbuds to find the live system. Is there anything? It's in there. Earbuds for the mobile instruction. Yep. Here is the video. This is the little number. It's in there.
Russian, you're right, it's Russian. I was playing Pooley backwards. Look, listen to this, it's amazing. This is amazing. Where's Pooley? I can't spell. MVP Scrubby. Wow. Now, Martin played backwards, sounds Dutch.
I mean, I'm not from Seabrooks. Yeah, forward from the sound system.
Whereas me, backwards, sounds Russian. Alright. So what's the point of all this? I don't really want to play with a minute worth of audio. I'm going to trim this down to crop. So we've got about 12 seconds of audio. So we recorded in, and the playback came out separately, right? I mean, or the playback didn't come out at all when we first started. So what I'm going to do now is, let's clear that, because I was just saying silly stuff. Now it's my chance to be elite rapper, and say yo, word up. Yo, word up. No, come on, come back there. Yo, word up. LCA is the place to be in Perth. Yo,
word up. Word up. Word up. Yeah. Cool. Wait, boy. Yo. Yeah.
Isn't that cool? So, so you can imagine if you had someone with skill and microphone technique, you can actually do sort of live recording and play around with stuff as it's being recorded. So the reason I'm saying you two can be Missy Elliott is because you can play stuff, and as you're recording someone,
you've
got to play along, and then
take
direction and jump around to what they said just now and stuff like that. And you can do all this kind of vinyl scratching type stuff on sounds as they're coming in. So as they're coming in through the microphone, so you might have a band playing or you've got instruments playing and stuff like that, and then you can just do a little quick bit of scratching and then cut back to what's actually happening right now, where you can plug a microphone in and have a vocalist singing and stuff, and then You can modify the voice that's being played, so it might actually be recording at a normal speed, but then you play it out backwards as it's being recorded. So you can play around like that. You can record in a loop, which is kind of cool. So what happens there is, as you'd expect, when the little red record line gets to the other end, it just jumps back to the beginning and starts again. Okay, so then you've got this loop that keeps getting overwritten. Instead of it getting overwritten continuously, you leave some of the previous sound in, so you mix some of that in, attenuate it a little, make it a little quieter, mix that in with the new sound. And this is going to sound awful. I was going to bring an instrument, but I can't play instruments and stuff, so let's not go there. So we're going to witness some scrubbing technique with a whoa. This is just like the coolest thing in the world. I've only got one word for playing with this stuff, and that is beer. This is a lot of fun to play with, all right? I can imagine people could use it in real artistic environments and make interesting stuff with it and do interesting live kind of performance stuff with it. But it's a hell of a lot of fun to just set up in your living room and play with. Anyway. Next. Okay, so we've done that. That's a nice lit recording technique. That's just recording. I'm going to move on to the DJing stuff, which you've kind of got some basic idea of how this is going to work, and then I'm going to put it all together. And check how much time we've got for that so I can rush through it. Okay, I've got about 25 minutes to teach you all how to DJ. Alright, just going to quit that because I do not want a copy of that file. Alright. What am I doing? Load existing file. Okay. Recording, we've done recording. You two can be Mr. Elliott. the concordance of selection, you can keep or overwrite the previous sound, you can do looped and reverse recording. Sounds silly on screen, but you've seen it all in action now. The next thing we're going to do is learn what DJing is all about. And DJing is obviously all about attitude. It's all about being extremely cool and having cool headphones and stuff and sitting there going, whoa, yeah, I'm DJ. Rock. Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's a very serious act. Alrighty. I'm not a DJ, but this book told me the technique, and I thought, I'll go and make a tool that can let people do that technique. And this is where we're at. Now, what a DJ does, what people who go to dance clubs and go, DJ, you're cool. I think a DJ does beat mixing and mixes records, and that's all cool. The main aim of a DJ, the main skill that a DJ has is to make music that sounds good, to choose the right songs to play and play them and respond to the crowd, right? It's a very interactive thing. You've got people dancing to you and you want to play music that they want right now. You don't play stuff that's too fast if they're too tired, and you don't play stuff that's too slow if they just want to party hard. So you've got to respond to the crowd, and it's all got to be very interactive. I like stuff that's interactive. So the first thing that you do is you get a couple of songs, or you get, here we're going to play with just some loop samples and stuff like that, and you play them so that they play in time. Now what we've done so far with Sweep is just load up files and edit them and play that file. Done. Play a little bit of it, modify it. What we want to do now is pretend we're not in a dingy lecture hall, nice lecture hall, but instead we're, I don't know, in a field at a big party or in a club somewhere, and we can't just make random sounds out of the speakers. We need to make music that keeps happening. So you need to mix multiple files together. Now, the first thing you can do with Sweep is you can play multiple files at once, all right? So what we're going to do. So we've got a loop sample there. I'll just leave that playing, we'll sound better. Okay, so you can have a couple of files playing at once, right? You can have fun with that. You can get scrubby. Okay, that's a lot of fun. I'll play around, I'll load up some files, and we'll see the kind of thing that you can do. That's all good fun. Light up a whole bunch of stuff and play it. Hooray! It's all good. Now you can hear everything I was doing, right? Like I was loading up files and I was trying them out and I was screwing around with the timing and things like that. Now what DJ does, there's two things in this thing called beat mixing, which this slide here is about. You have a couple of files, you want to play them simultaneously, you want them to be in time so they've each got you know, constant drum beats and stuff, and you want the drum beats to line up or to not line up in the right way. And you want them to play at the same speed, otherwise they just run all over each other and it sounds awful. So Sweep has a few things for changing the speed of files. Okay, so there's two skills you need to have. One is to change the speed of the file, the other is to change the point it's playing at. You've seen that Scrubby is very useful for changing where a file is playing really quickly. The other one is the speed control, where you can get the file playing and make it play faster or slower with that speed adjustment, that pitch slider there. Which is upside down, but it's computer software, so we can cope with that. Now, that's cool, so I'll show you what to avoid, then you'll know what to try to do, right? So we've got two loops playing there. If they were playing at different speeds, then they just get all awful and topple all over each other and it's bad. Whereas if they're at the same speed, that's all good. Now luckily these loop files I'm using here are at the same BPM. You can see they're exactly the same duration, 2.667 seconds each. It's working at the same speed and they've been made to work together. They're easy to play with together. Where do you get these kind of files? Best place at the moment, especially when you're starting out, is magazines like this, Future Music and Computer Music, which come with CDs with hundreds of samples on them, and you can get instrument samples and little bits of vocals and effects and drum loops and things like that, and you can play around with them. Okay, so with mixing, you can hear everything I'm doing. The next thing to do is say, wait a minute, that's just not elite enough. Okay, so get our DJing headphones on. What we do is we play this one here, and then while that's playing, while you can hear this, I switch this one over to headphones. Well, you can hear that. You can't hear the blue one, but you can hear the yellow one, right? I can hear the blue one through this, through my headphones. I listen to just one ear because otherwise I can't hear everything else as well. So now I can play around with this and adjust the timing and stuff like that. See, I'm having fun here and you can't even hear it. It's great. Sounds awful. And then when I've got a mix that I think sounds good enough, I just click the monitor button again and just stomp all over each other. Because I don't know what I'm doing. So basically what you can do there is you can, generally what a DJ would do is have a couple of turntables and listen to one through the headphones while the other one's playing and cue that one up and then play it when it's ready and then switch over that turntable and then switch back to this one. What you can do with Sweep is, it's as if you've got any number of turntables. Each window that is open is its own little thing that's playing along. So you'll be playing this one. Then you can be monitoring this one here. And then when you think it's ready, flick it out for the rest of the world to hear. Like if I want to load up some cool Ready Keys, where you can actually play kind of at musical notes. Did some Snap Trackers did, which are programs for doing simple sequencing on PCs. And basically it uses the QWERTY keyboard on the PC to play notes at different pitches. So you can imagine if you used to like a, you know what a black and white music keyboard looks like. Imagine that QWERTY is like C, D, E, F, G, A, with sharps and flats and so forth in place. And with Sweep you can play those keys, and you can play sounds faster and slower using that. That's another way to speed up and slow down samples. It's also another way to play music and stuff with the samples that you've got. The way it works is that it triggers a sample at the position that the mouse is at when you hit that button. So if I just press Q right here where Scrubby is,
it begins in Africa.
And just plays the sample just like that, right? I've got quick control over it.
It began in Africa.
Just like that. Play faster if I want.
It began in Africa.
I can do silly stuff with the key repeat.
It began in Africa.
That's okay, I'm not claiming to have serious DJ face, so that's a good clip. I'm gonna go and play with my normal sample. Okay. You can mix this with everything else that you can do in Sweep as well, okay? So, you've got this flexible playback tool, you've got the sample editing, you've got the live recording and so forth, and you can do all of it at the same time, you can sort of mix it up. So, you can say, okay, I really like this sample that I've got here, you know, but you know, I really want to run a compressor over it. So, while it's playing, while he's playing with it, you can play with this. And, compress the sample. Much more punchy now, you know, you can do that in the mix while it's playing. So you can use all the processors and stuff like that. So it's a, you know, really cool sound, but I like to sound my own voice better, so you can, like, you know, record into it as you're doing it. So you can have this silly sort of going. Say word up, yeah, this is really cool. Yeah, word up, what? Oh my god, sing backwards. Yeah, word up, okay, this place to be, come on. Say that. Say that one. Hey, what's that? Yeah, okay. So here, like, you've got...
Record,
and the playhead following
each other randomly.
That's kind of fun thing you can do there, and you can scrub around it. Sort of going and change you can change the delay between them if you want, or you can change the direction just as it's playing, so you can be speaking and have what you're speaking immediately played out backwards to you. Sort of just so now, like, you know, I've got what I'm... Exactly what I'm saying, setting some chipmunk's voice backwards as it's actually happening. And there's music playing, so I must be music that I saw there. Any questions? New, yeah. Oh man, I've just, everything you just heard now is being recorded in speaks format, and you'll be able to like get it on the conference CD. Rockstar. Now I think I need to get my skills up, and I'm here to like teach you guys how to do the same. Jack. Sure, yeah. It's more a problem of being in the same room as the speakers. I mean, like, you know, if you're in some quite a DJ booth with monitors that you could switch on and off, then that's not as much of a problem. I mean, you'd want to set up your, I don't know, set up your performance some different way, and you probably wouldn't want one person sitting at a box doing vocals and mixing the vocals and scratching on the vocals at the same time. You know, you'd probably want a few people working together with instruments and skills and things. And doing it. Any other questions? Yeah, off the back. All right. It's a 1.2 gig Duron. With what, sorry? With more samples? Okay. Best fun I've had with this, I went up to, I live in Sydney, I went to a electronic music conference in Newcastle, did a bit of a road trip up there, saw some talks about electrofringe, saw some talks about sampling and stuff. And I had my laptop with Sweep with me and all my samples. And afterwards went to a mate's place, the guy who played keyboard in that in Loeb, the band before. And we just jammed for hours. I plugged the laptop into a guitar amp. And we went for about 3 or 4 hours, just continuous jam. And I kept laying on samples, like just lots and lots of loops and lots of vocals and things like that. And in the end, I had about 20 samples playing at once, and then plus a bunch of spot samples that I was just picking up randomly and using. And you know, that was just working fine on, I can't remember, probably about a, I don't know, 1.5 gig laptop or less, I don't know. Okay, so this is all, the stuff I'm working with here is sample files, which you can see they're all like, you know, 4 or 5 seconds long, right? I can't remember what RAM that box had. It's a Dell laptop, so you know, it's probably not too little or too much. Yeah, a lot of fun. Any other questions? Yes, it would be, yeah. Having a pressure-sensitive stylus, that would be very cool. Both for editing and for live stuff. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. I had the idea to have the being able to move the needle around while you're editing a file a couple of years ago. I mean, that's a, I don't know, lots of other people said, oh, I want to do that. I think I've done some other live tools for doing, like setting up loops and running effects, doing like the whole sort of filter networky thing. I've got another tool which does that, and yeah, I need to merge the two. But so I've always liked just playing with stuff live, and it's a lot more sort of fun than having all this offline stuff that you spend hours and weeks writing a song. And yeah, it's possible to actually do a lot of this stuff on the fly, do it live, get live input, screw with that, set beats up, you know, switch between them, have a crossfader on screen, do all that kind of stuff. And so I've just sort of been into having that anyway. Yeah, I think once I sort of got the scrubbing going, it sounded kind of like vinyl, and I sort of thought, I'll make it play a couple of sounds at once. And then this headphone queuing thing I only put in 0.8, like on Friday or Saturday. I wrote that last week because I wanted to use that here, at least to demonstrate that it works. This is obviously why my usage of it isn't really particularly great or anything. I haven't had any practice on that whatsoever. But it works now, right? So you can, as it's playing, you can switch the headphones and switch it back, and that's monitoring any individual sample. You switch it from the main out to the headphones. Here I've got headphones in Dev DSP and queuing outwards. I'll show you that actually, because I forgot to show that off. This is the playback configure audio device dialog. This is where I set the device buffering before on this tab. On this tab here, I can set which sound devices I want to use for monitoring and not. By default, it doesn't use a different device for monitoring. It just outputs the Dev DSP. If you've got two sound cards, then then you can do this, DevDSP and DevDSP1. Here I've got DSP1 is my better card, so I use that for the main output, and I've got the headphones plugged into the front of the box, which is the onboard sound card. And that's all it is for configuring that. And basically it just keeps track of all the samples that are playing to the headphones and all the samples that are playing to the main output and mixes them transparently. Yeah, kind of vaguely similar to how a DJ mixer works, except that with this you've got you can't both monitor and output at the same time, but then conversely with this you've got as many samples playing at once as you want, as many inputs. Any other questions? Yeah. Multiple mics? Mice. Multiple mice. No. How does that work? You have to be very dexterous, wouldn't you? Yeah. I think that's a good idea. You're right, yeah. I know. I'll have to think about that, because it's the next input thing and blah, 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 blah. Implementation details don't matter. Let's do that. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Right. You can, yeah, with X input, you can have like a primary and a secondary cursor, and I think one is the actual mouse cursor and the other is a separate device, is that right? Yeah. So you could have one, I mean, that could be cool. It could mean that you could have your actual mouse that you're mousing with, and then you could have a couple of separate devices for scratching with, and they could be not necessarily mice. Actually, I'm using a trackball. This is a lot more fun to, a lot nicer to scrub with than a mouse. Stays in place for one thing, and you have a lot more sort of control like that with it. So you can get, where's the vocal? Still playing.
This calls for some big scratching.
The other thing I'm doing there is I've got a key binding to use. Secret key binding, it's documented in these tute notes, which are online now, and they're kind of the notes for this tute, except I didn't really follow them directly. Secret key binding to invoke scrubbing with the Windows key. So if you're, actually even if you're not in scrub mode, you hold down the Windows key and you move the mouse and it scrubs on that bit. And that means you can do it two-handed, so you don't have to sort of hold your finger down and then scrub. I mean, I spent hours like that on a mouse and my hand started to hurt. That's not good. And you also lose flexibility, right? And with the trackball, I'd need to like hold the thumb down on the button and then try to scrub like that, and that's just no fun. So with this key binding, you can just hold down the Windows key over here and then just scrub like that and get more control. Trackballs are good. The standard line is I've got this one here. Get as big a ball as you can get. There are these Play School ones with a ball that big. I haven't used one of them. Couldn't find one when I went to buy it. So I've got this one instead, which is made by a hardware company that specializes in hardware for Linux-based PCs called Microsoft. The reason I got this trackball for Sweep is that big ball. With a ball, you've also got momentum, right? So you've got physical momentum in the ball that you can scrub with. I mean, there's momentum in Scrubby as well, obviously, but with this, you just get a bit more tactile response. It's got a mouse wheel, which the Logitech one didn't have. And as you can see, the mouse wheel is used for zooming in and out quickly. There are key bindings for zooming in and out, and there's buttons up here as well. But the quickest way to zoom around is with the mouse wheel. So you want easy access to all that stuff. So with this, you can zoom into a file, and you can click over here and zoom in on it, and zoom out, and it's really quick to move around. Wait. Okay. Any other questions? Stunned silence. What time are we at? Oh God, it's exactly 1 p.m. That's crazy. Okay, well, thank you all for attending the tutorial. I hope you've all had fun with Scrubby. I hope you've all learnt something about it, both about real editing and also just random fun stuff that you can do with it. Thank you. Just briefly before you go, these are the URLs that you need, sweep.sourceforge.net for the software. If you want to email me, conrad@metadex.org, it's my site there. There's a mailing list for all this stuff. And tomorrow I'm going to go through just some ranting about hacking and silliness, daydreaming, and so forth. Implementation as well. If you're interested in the implementation of the scrubbing, implementation of monitoring the latency and stuff like that, that's the stuff I'm going to be talking about tomorrow. So now you've actually seen all the stuff you can do with it. Tomorrow you can find out how it works if you want to come along to that. And these notes, they'll be on the CD when you get them eventually, I guess. They're also online. Just go to the website and click on tutorials, and this is a bit of stuff from today. Thank you.